time now for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, who joins us here in the studio with a mountain of paperwork about all of the things that have happened this week in history. How are you?
I'm doing good, Aaron. You know what? I think we can actually say happy signing of the Declaration of Independence Day.
Oh, hey,
that is today.
Yeah.
August 2nd, 1776. Now, we always celebrate
July 4th.
It's
about time they got around
4th.
To it. Yes. The document had been sitting there for
the
better part of the month.
Well, after they did that, and they went ahead and printed copies, though it only had John Hancock's signature. John Dunlap was the printer. They printed those copies, but the signed copy begins August 2nd, and that's when people sign, including the delegates from North Carolina.
Well, John Hancock had wasted so much ink signing his own name with a giant giant signature that he used up all of the ink, and then, God, Trump's tariffs made ink from Canada hard to get, so it took that long.
Smuggle it
in from overseas.
That's it. So it's a great day that they finally said, yeah, maybe we should sign this.
Yeah.
And it was a way of really making sure that what people had voted on, they were willing to sign and say, yes, this is a commitment.
And they really are kind of taking their lives in their hands by doing that, because
It's very dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, it's at the time, it's literally an act of treason. I mean, you're committing treason against the government in the hopes that you win, and then none dare call it treason. Right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And you have the issue of, this was a formal declaration that actually was used to solicit support abroad from France and other countries to say, this is legitimate. This is not just a few people. These are leaders who have been have voted and deliberated on it, and it was set in the way it was to help put the cause in very stark terms. Mm-hmm. And in fact, after it was voted on, of course, over the few days leading up to July 4th, then George Washington reads that to the troops on, I believe, June 9th. But here in North Carolina, there's also, before they do the signing, the official signing on August 2nd, on August 1st, the day before, a copy of that printed copy, the John Dunlap one, comes to North Carolina, and it's actually read on August 1st in Halifax, which seems very appropriate. Cornelius Harnett read it, and Harnett was part of the group that produced the Halifax Resolves earlier. They date this on the North Carolina flag, and May 12th, 1776. And the basis of that Halifax Resolve was to instruct North Carolina's delegates to Congress, Hugh, Penn, and Hooper, to go ahead and lobby the other delegates. It was time for independence. And 2 months after that is when we have the Declaration of Independence. And William Hooper, who was originally from Boston, but he was in Wilmington, and very instrumental in helping to formulate a lot of the policies and the new government of North Carolina, the charter, he was called one of the great orators of Congress by John Adams. So I happen to think, even though we don't have the dotted lines, to feel that the North Carolina was very instrumental in helping to coalesce interest and say that we needed to do this. Unlike the musical 1776, which makes it seem like North Carolina is just sitting on the back waiting for what does South Carolina do, and that's not exactly true.
Well, there's also however active North Carolina was at the Continental Congress, you also have the Regulator Rebellion a few years earlier, which also kind of continues to push the ball forward in
terms
of, we need to push back against this government.
That's right. And of course, we had, you know, Lexington conquered 1775. Mm-hmm. February 1776 is when those Scottish Highlanders are defeated down at the Battle of Morse Creek Bridge near Wilmington, and prevents the British from taking the port of Wilmington and having a second front, which later historians would say was critical because we didn't have enough resources to fight a battle on two fronts.
Mm-hmm.
But when that happened,
we still don't have enough resources to fight a battle on.
That's right, and that point time though, when that occurred, North Carolina also, as a result of the Regulator Rebellion, as a result of Alamance County battle back in May 19th, 1771, they knew what was coming, that the British would be ruthless. They had faced this already, and they said, "No, this is the time when we need to lobby, go ahead and get the other countries. We're not going to face the British alone because they will come back with a fury.
Yep.
And that was critical, I think, in helping coalesce the growing sentiment that it was time for something different, which is kind of important. So today is the day when the signature
and
William
signed,
Hooper was not there on July 4th when they voted on it, but he was here on August 2nd.
So where was it actually signed? Was it circulated around? Did everyone had to go up to Philadelphia?
They did. Okay. They had to go up to Philadelphia. In fact, my understanding is there was one delegate who did not sign it until...
For several years,
Thomas McCain didn't sign his name until 1781.
I'll sign it now. Yeah, sure.
Hey, Tom, you want to sign it? Let me just see how things are turning out.
I'm 1781.
Yeah, that's when the war practically comes to a close. I think he hedged his bet. Well, my name's not... Okay, now I'll sign on.
You keep your voice lower and you double your choices.
But you're absolutely right what you said about people... Everyone who signed that became... a wanted man by the British.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There was no way around it, and these people were traveling over vast distances too. That's the other thing, which is just astonishing to note, is these delegates weren't just in Philadelphia or from Philadelphia. They were coming from Massachusetts. They were coming from South Carolina, North Carolina. And it was very grueling and very dangerous.
And that's a decent half a day's drive today, but 1776, that took, in some cases, weeks to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And why I bring up William Hooper is because he plays into the news this week as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, down in Wilmington in 1781, there was a British colonel who took Wilmington for the British in January of 1781, and I'm trying to find what the specific date was.
You've got a lot of papers.
Oh, yeah, here I am.
It's this day.
It's actually August 2nd.
The whole room is just full of history right now. This is like this mountain of papers that's sitting around. It's like I'm looking for a needle in it.
I get so excited about this program. Like, oh, my gosh, look at this nugget. Yeah. All right, let's
looking
get
for a needle in a history stack is what you're doing right now. Okay, William
All right, August 2nd, 1781. So here we are 5 years after... The Declaration of Independence is signed on August 2nd. 5 years later to the day, that's when British forces clash with North Carolina militia near Wilmington in a skirmish known as the Battle of Rockfish. Now, this happens because he's a British major, James Craig, who captures Wilmington in January, some months earlier, and then issues a proclamation threatening the loss of life and property to all who would not swear loyalty to English King George III. And, of course, not many people stepped up to say, great idea.
Right.
And so then he began to devastate the territory around Wilmington. It was really a campaign of terror, and including William Hooper's house, which was Finian on the Masonboro Sound, which he was a lovely home, and burned it to the ground. And Hooper and his family became refugees and actually fled inland. Luckily, his wife, Anne, had a brother who was in the militia in Hillsborough, and they found a place there.
Hmm.
And that's where the Hoopers go, and actually buy Francis Nash's house. It's still standing. So if you go to Hillsborough, you can actually see a house where one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence was. His actual graveyard is there, too. So, just interesting to say.
Where he had to hide out during the
Revolution. Yes, and
it's
a perfect example of the fact of what you were saying, that by signing this, these people became wanted men. And here it was even 5 years later, and he's on the run for his life. His whole property is burned down, and he has to flee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just shows you, gives a little bit more substance to this, what it was really like.
Yeah.
And that's... It should make us all pause.
Yeah. Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters. What else is going on?
All right.
In
well, here is something really cool, and I think it's a great week for this, and it has to do with a person named Jesse Owens.
Oh yeah.
1936, the Olympics is held in Hitler's Germany,
mm-hmm.
and you've probably seen the pictures. I mean, this was going to be the big propaganda windfall. And Jesse Owens, the African-American American track star, upsets Hitler's theory of Aryan superiority by winning a gold, actually wins four gold medals. And this is that week, actually.
And these were all this week, basically, right?
Yes. Yeah. August 3rd is when he wins his first one for the 100-meter race, and he goes on to win four. Also, the U.S. took gold in rowing, and the wonderful book, The Boys in the Boat, is a great book about that story of these unlikely heroes who came out of nowhere in Spokane, Washington, to win this against all the elite rowing clubs, including Germany.
Yeah.
And apparently Hitler was in attendance for that and just left, didn't say anything.
Well, it was a rowing match.
It was a rowing, but that was pretty
amazing.
It's
really exciting there towards the end.
It is.
Yeah.
So I mean, those are kind of things that I find
cool. We kind of understate this, but the Olympic sites are chosen years in advance.
Yes.
So it is actually kind of a coincidence of history that that the Olympics happened to be held in Berlin in 1936, because
that's right.
The site, I assume, was chosen well before Hitler's rise to power, probably at a time when that would never have even been anticipated. So,
but here was going to be the big propaganda.
It was
going to
be like he seized it as his moment, and then it just comes tumbling down.
And this was white superiority. Mm-hmm. This was the master race kind of thing, and that's kind of demolished right there. Should have given Hitler a clue that this was not, if he was going to wage war.
I don't think he was going to get a clue at that point.
No, no. But Jesse Owens really is a great hero.
Yes.
That we can take great pride in. Now, there's something else that happens. July 30th, 1778. Now, I was really fascinated by this. Yes. This is the day when the Continental Congress passed a resolution honoring 10 sailors and Marines who spoke out against their commander's abuses of office. And it's now we honor today as National Whistleblower Day, which is just fascinating to think about that back then they were saying, yes, that doing the right thing matters and that it's a good thing that people speak up when they see wrong things happening and report it. And we're in their debt. But, that goes back to colonial times. That's just a kind of an exciting thing to think about. When sometimes people castigate that and say, who are these people leaking this information? Sometimes that's the most patriotic thing you can do to make sure that the truth comes out.
And there actually is a parallel there between speaking out against your boss or speaking out against your company or speaking out against your country, as in the case of the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
That's
you're also taking a huge risk by doing that, but you're doing the right thing. And
that's right.
In both of these cases, luckily, it works out.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's a big risk because oftentimes it doesn't work out.
That's
do the right thing and you don't end up benefiting from it personally, but you still should do the right thing regardless.
And it's also why we have rules and regulations and laws to help protect people because to prevent those worst excesses from happening.
All right. What else do we have? We've got time for a couple more.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, all right. Well, this is speaking of the whistleblowers. We should note that this is the week in 1974, July 30th, is when the Judiciary Committee recommends that Richard Nixon face impeachment because of Watergate. Mm. And it's also when the issue of the tapes come out and transcripts get released, which is really a pivotal moment in American history. So when people say, oh, what are we doing? I said, our system works because good people stood up and said, no, there is an issue of right and wrong.
Yeah, and in that case, also against their own personal interest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is a lot of, in that case, Republicans who continue to defend the president because you stand with your own. But at a certain point, it gets to that level where you say, no, even if this comes back to bite me on Election Day, this is the right thing to do.
That's
We're
going
to do this regardless.
Another kind of highlight moment is 1965, July 30th, is when Medicaid was signed into law by President Johnson to provide health care benefits for the elderly.
Medicare, right,
yeah. And that's, you know, that's one of those things that is still in the news, because when people say universal health, how can we do it? Well, we have a standing system that's provided health care. It works, and it could be expanded. And that's really interesting. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, some would say.
Yep.
But to know that people were thinking back then, that many years ago, that this is important, and this is a way to address a real issue that really does concern people's health and safety, and that's vital to the country.
Speaking with Scott Washington, talking history, we've got time for one more. What do you got?
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, this one, 1583. Okay, we're going way back.
Oh, we're going way back.
Yes, August 5th.
Just slightly before the revolution here.
That's right, 1583. That's when an English explorer, Sir Humphrey Gilbert, lands and establishes a colony at St. John's, Newfoundland, while searching for a northwest passage to the Far East. One of the first colonies from European side in the New World.
Wait, go back. He's looking, he's sailing from Europe. He wants to find a northwest passage
to the Far East. Yeah, like
he
going
gets
going
the
across.
First plot of land he can possibly find. Like, St. John's is well out into the Atlantic.
It is way up on the East Coast.
Well, we hit land. I guess this isn't happening.
All right, who wants to stay? You know, that happened in 1602. Now, besides when Bartholomew Gosnold sails over, and he lands at a little island that's better known today as Cuttyhunk, and so they stay, a group of people stay there over the summer, and then they say, no, we don't want to be up here in New England during the winter, and
right.
So they leave.
And so they'll leave,
but
yeah.
Nobody loses their life, and they sail back, and that leads to Bartholomew Gosnold is with the group that goes to Jamestown. So I think it was like the first successful. You mean nobody died? Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, that's good. Why don't we go again? Yeah.
Still, though, it's like you could like at least sail around Newfoundland, right? Like, that's an island. You could just sail around and like hit the Canadian mainland.
I wonder if they declared success. Well, we found it. Or
at least get to Labrador. Like, Sir Humphrey, are you sure you don't want to go? No, we're good. We're good.
Yeah, you're good.
It's quite cold and it's August. I don't think I want to go any further beyond that.
Now, see, this is where conjecture does play an important part of history. Imagination.
I conjecture that, I don't really know.
See, history can be fun. So if you're looking at this, that's why we look at it and go, what were they thinking?
thinking he doesn't want to go any further.
That's right.
All right. History matters, as always. Scott Washington, always
Thanks
a pleasure.
So much.
Thank
Appreciate
you so much.
It.